My subject is the training of youth in body, mind and spirit as practiced in the Boy Scout and Girl Guide movement. I am emboldened to give explanation of our scheme, seeing that it is a form of education by amateurs on unorthodox lines and which nevertheless has had its measure of success and might therefore have its interest for educationists. In speaking of the two movements of Boy Scouts and Girl Guides, it will be more convenient if, when I mention Boy Scouts, the Girl Guides are understood to be also included. In the Boy Scouts training, then, we are out to help parents and teachers in training their boys to make the best of life and to be valuable assets to the citizenhood of the nation. We take the boy in his spare time and try to fill in any chinks left in his education by the school. Our training aims generally to develop health and character, coupled with a generous spirit of happiness through service. In order to get at the individual boy, our unit under a scoutmaster is limited to 32. I long ago found out myself that my own limit was 16. Our training is carried out mainly through the medium of outdoor pursuits such as camping, hiking, nature study, and joyous adventure of any kind. It is made to appeal to the young people so that in its pursuit they largely educate themselves. That it has succeeded in attracting them is shown by the fact that the movement has grown up automatically, being taken up by the boys and girls themselves to the extent that in this, the 20th year of its existence, it already numbers over 2.25 million distributed in 42 different countries. The effect of the training on character show themselves early in the process. The sense of honor and truthfulness quickly possesses the boys and remains a permanent attribute. Similarly, the sense and practice of service for others appears to appeal even to the toughest and soon manifests itself as a habit. Then the comradeship of world brotherhood is bringing about an altogether new spirit of goodwill between nations, which is the first essential to world peace, and without which treaties and leagues are lifeless. Taken as a whole, the results of the Boy Scout training have exceeded all expectations. The Scoutmaster's training. Naturally, such results could not be obtained on the mere willingness of the boy to be taught. There must be the man behind the scenes to inspire him. The surprise is that these scoutmasters and guiders, as they are termed, have, without any training in the scholastic sense, nevertheless proved successful as teachers. The reason for this is not far to seek, seeing that these men and women take up their self-imposed task because they love their charges and are in sympathy with them. They have the needed spirit, without which no teacher, however high his scholastic diplomas, can really be efficient. We have established 3 main training schools at which men and women are trained and fitted to go out and hold training camps for scouters and guiders in their districts. In their training, they learn not merely the important details of organization, troop management, finance, patrol system, badge work, woodcraft, campcraft, etc., but they study the subject that has the greatest importance of all, and that is the boy himself. The novel step in our training schools, then, is that the would-be instructor goes through a course of being a boy again himself. He thereby revives his boyish tastes, interests, and enthusiasms, and sees things, especially scouting and its teachings, from the boy's point of view. The aim of our training has been condensed into the alliterative phrase, we are out to make healthy, happy, helpful citizens. That is, we try to develop the boys in body, mind, and spirit. We inculcate those 3 H's side by side with the 3 R's of the school. But the 3 H's, when analyzed, cover a very wide field of study and effort. First, let us take health of body. National statistics show that there is still an appalling amount of preventable ill health in the nation, hence the loss of wages, prosperity, and happiness. Sir George Newman has recently pointed out that you cannot make a healthy nation by legislation, by notification of diseases, sewerage, or by laws, but by the right domestic and personal living of the people. Our object is to make the individual boy understand personal self-care and his responsibility for his own health and strength. It is a duty to himself, to the nation, and to his maker. Some knowledge of the engine and how it works is necessary to the man who drives the car if he is to drive it successfully and to get the best work out of it. Consequently, the man learns all he can about it. It is precisely the same with the human engine, and to work it to the best advantage, the man should know something of its interior arrangements. But most of us continue to drive our engine without knowing a thing about its works and their ways of working. We merely take our engine to the garage doctor when it breaks down and expect him to patch it up and make it do for another run under our ignorant hand. But remember this, no engine is really foolproof, especially the human engine. If in place of lubricating oil, we fill our engine with grease and substitute whiskey for petrol and pour sand instead of water into the radiator, we must not be surprised if she doesn't work very satisfactorily. Yet that is the sort of thing we do with our human engine. We stuff all sorts of food down our gullet without thinking or knowing whether these are good for it, and then we wonder why it does not respond to the feeding. Health knowledge is not difficult to acquire and is full of interest even to the boy. The only point is that it should be inculcated in such a way as not to make him morbidly or pruriently introspective. Sir George Newman has put very concisely the six elements of nutrition essential for bodily health, of which there should be more general knowledge and understanding. These are food, fresh air, exercise, warmth, cleanliness, and rest. It would be too long to go into details here of the 6 points mentioned by Newman, and they are all dealt with in our training. But one special warning, I think, is needed in these days of specious advertisement, and that is against the quack drugs, which are so attractively pushed into the notice of all. If you have a pain or suspicion of illness, you have only to look through the advertisement columns of any cheap periodical, and you will find your symptoms described, possibly with arrows pointing to the afflicted spot and indicating the awful consequences which threaten you unless you take their wonderful elixir at 1 11 halfpenny. Then follows the portrait of some remarkably unattractive looking man or woman who since the first dose has taken no other. I verily believe that more of our illnesses come from imagination and dosing with drugs than ever come from natural causes. I certainly feel that we have it in our power to bring about a great development of health in the oncoming generation if we only set our minds to it. A valuable aid to such teaching for the young can be found in the Handbook of Education on Health issued by the Board of Education. The second point of our theme is happiness of mind. Unless the boy has health, he cannot have complete happiness. And there are many other ingredients also which go to make happiness. Companionship with friends of his own age is one of them. The gang has its natural attraction for the boy and forms his environment with lessons which last him for life. These may be good, but quite as often are evil. It is up to us to give him, through the scout troop, a gang which will bring him good influences and cheery comradeship. Then a step as important as any to happiness is the opportunity for self-expression. If a boy is encouraged to have pursuit of some sort, whether in games, in hobbies, in handcrafts, or art, he is no longer bored and at a loose end. It is the slacker who is always ready for the companionship of him who finds some mischief still for idle hands to do. Then times of difficulty and discouragement will probably have to be faced by the boy at one time or another. For these, he should have due preparation if he is not to take them too seriously. If he has been trained to courage, to self-control, and hopefulness, such as gives him to see his obstacles in their due proportion, he will tackle them cheerily and will rise above depression. Remember always, sense of proportion is an invaluable virtue, but it is rarely gained where there is not also sense of humor. Many other qualities will no doubt suggest themselves to the scouter studying the question, but my meaning briefly is that character is essential to happiness. The prevailing feverish hunting after pleasure is unsatisfactory, unthrifty, and unsettling. A new influence in our national life has come into being within the last 5 or 10 years, and I have seen so far little attempt to counteract it in the training of our youth. It is the widespread and growing power over the masses of the kinema, the wireless broadcasting, and the cheap and popular press. These are becoming largely controlled by individual trusts, combines, and parties. Through these centralized channels, the ideas and opinions of, comparatively speaking, one or two men become unconsciously the ideas and opinions of millions. The influence might be good, but it might just as easily be bad. The danger lies in the people becoming accustomed to having their minds made up for them, without any exercise of their own judgment or conscience in the process. We train the boy to balance his mind by discussions and mock trials, whereby he gets the habit of hearing both sides of a question before making up his mind on a subject. Thus, the fervid eloquence of the tub-thumper leaves him cold, and he is not carried away by it. Our aim is to build up a sane and balanced manhood, to counter the misleading propaganda now becoming so prevalent, and to meet the extension of franchise now open to thousands of young men and young women. Mr. W. W. Hill, in his presidential address to the National Union of Teachers the other day, said it is not democracy that is the menace, but ignorance. A half-educated nation without character in its individuals is not a sound nation. But our nation suffers from another evil. It is choked with narrow self-interestedness of individuals, parties, creeds, and classes. Our method of competitive education is apt, if it is not watched, to promote this spirit of personal gain. If we could eradicate this and replace it with broad-minded outlook and human sympathy, it would make for that goodwill and cooperation so vitally needed for the nation's happiness through prosperity and peace. William Platt, in his recent book, I Want to Be Happy, shows that the main avenue to the highest happiness is through sympathy. So we come to the third H, namely helpfulness, coupled with the third point of body, mind, and spirit. The spirit of sympathy, when put into action, is helpfulness. This spirit is practically the spirit of the Christian religion, namely love towards our fellow man. As G.B. Shaw says, there is only one religion, though there are many versions of it. Christ laid down for us, in the simplest possible terms, what our religion should be, namely, first, to love God, secondly, to love our neighbor. These are above the law and the prophets, above ritual and denomination. The point for us is to see how this basic spirit can be infused into the young people. Identical methods are not applicable both to old and young alike. We have to recognize the fact that to a considerable extent, a boy gains the right spirit through right action, whereas with the man, action is inspired by the spirit. And in the scout movement, we encourage in the cub and continue in the scout the practice of doing good turns. And thus, through action, the spirit of helpfulness becomes developed in him. Ultimately, as a rover or a man, he is inspired by the spirit to undertake sacrifice and service. A boy learns by practice, not by precept. The love is to him merely a state of mind, whereas its expression, namely to render service, is something he can do, a very different matter. So for the young, we have to translate the spirit of religion into practical acts. It is for this reason that in the Scout law and promise, we give, in place of the abstract idea, love God, the positive equivalent, do your duty to God. And for the abstract, love your neighbor, the positive equivalent, help other people at all times. To know his duty to God some appreciation of God is needed by the boy. As a step to this, we turn to nature law as the best assistant ready to our hand. We make woodcraft a special feature of the scout training. Through observation of the wonders and beauties of nature around them, young people gain more readily a conception of God as a beneficent creator, and they get to realize their own position and part in the universal scheme of things. They can, for instance, be led to recognize that it is part of their duty to develop, care for, and perfect the body and mind with which the Creator has endowed them. They can be shown how reproduction of their species becomes a definite duty in the order of nature, and the sex questions thus become easy of explanation and are given a sanctified position in the adolescent mind. It is through interest in animals, birds, and plants that a gentle spirit of kindliness is developed, and this, once established, readily expands itself into the boy's attitude towards his fellow men. The spark of love is kindled. There is in every human individual the germ of love, that bit of God, as the soul has been termed, which, if its expression is encouraged, will develop till it permeates the character of the boy. In the scout's training, therefore, we develop the element of this love through expression, by friendship with animals, and good terms to other people. Thus, the boy's religious sense grows from within, and is not merely the doctrinal veneer of a divinity lesson. Through such methods, in the scout and guide movement, we endeavor to help education to develop our boys and girls in body, mind, and spirit.